The flood of headlines coming out of the water crisis in Flint comes down to a basic problem. The city was starved for cash, and that led to a series of bad decisions, and, well, here we are today. But Flint is not the only Michigan city caught in a cash crunch. All across the state, cities are starved for revenue, most of them not because of something the city's done, but because of things the state has done. Bridge Magazine writer Ron French is here with us to talk about a report he co-wrote with Mike Wilkinson, Flint Syndrome. Fewer cops, abandoned parks, town fundraisers to buy fire equipment, cuts to youth programs. Ron, what's going on here?
Yeah, it sounds pretty depressing, doesn't it? Well, this is something that a lot of people don't realize because it's happened gradually. You know, if you live in a city and over a period of 10 years, a park gets less and less taken care of, you don't really notice it as much. Mm-hmm. But when you take a step back, and Flint, unfortunately, has put us in a position of trying to take a look at that, you find that what happened in Flint really is happening to a lesser extent in other ways in cities all across Michigan. And it's not just these urban cities that some people say might be mismanaged. You have cities like Troy. You think, what could be wrong with Troy, you know, where 50% of their police are gone? Ann Arbor, my goodness, how much of a stronger city could you have than Ann Arbor? One out of four police are gone from a decade ago. There's a systemic issue going on here.
So it's this drip, drip, drip of things happening that gets to the point where you're calling this Flint syndrome. So define what you mean by Flint syndrome.
Well, everyone knows that in Flint there were a series of mistakes that led to the water, mm-hmm. drinking water being poisoned. It's a tragedy. It's a national tragedy. When you have the president coming in, you know there's an issue there. But at the root of those mistakes, what led to those mistakes were just a systemic disinvestment in that city. And it was something that the city had no control over. And why we call it the Flint syndrome is that people do not realize how many other cities across Michigan are dancing along the edge of a financial cliff, one mistake away from the same sort of thing happening to them.
And this isn't just something that we could say, well, the Great Recession hit and really punched our state in the gut. This goes back decades.
This goes back decades. This began in the 1970s and with a series of decisions, starting with, I won't bore you with all the details, mm-hmm. but with something called the Headley Amendment.
Give
in
us
the 1970s.
The hits. I remember the campaign for the Headley Amendment.
Yes.
Very.
And then the 1990s with Prop A combined, what they did is that they limited a city's ability to collect property taxes. And that is how a city survives in Michigan, is on property taxes. Basically, the revenue a city collects from property taxes could go down rapidly, as it did during the recession, but it could not recover rapidly. After the recession, a city like Farmington Hills was one example. Okay, in Farmington Hills, it will take until the year 2038 for it to recover its property value revenue. Even though the property values have gone back up, mm-hmm. the revenue the city collects will not go up till 2038, and that's even without taking into account inflation.
The cities are handcuffed because of the Headley Amendment and Prop A and other factors, but it basically handcuffs them in order to collect revenue.
Absolutely. One person described it as the cities are bound and gagged, and there's no way for them to get out of it because they do not have control over the situation. On top of those two things, the other revenue stream is revenue sharing.
How does that work?
Revenue sharing is a percent of sales tax that the state is supposed to give back to cities, okay, to sort of even out funding mm-hmm. from city to city. And part of it is constitutional, and they have to give a certain percentage. But part of it is there was a law saying how much they were supposed to give, but it's up to the legislature every year to decide. And so what are you going to do? Well, let's give some more money to something else. And that makes sense. You have to make choices. You have
yes.
to make choices. And this wasn't just a Republican or Democrat thing.
Yeah.
It happened under Governor Granholm as a Democrat and now under Governor Snyder as a Republican. But since 2002, cities have been shorted by $5.5 billion. And you think about how much money that could make a difference, how much that could make a difference for cities like Flint. Flint's been shorted like $63 million itself.
So as my mother used to call it, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, doing that shifting and taking money away from the cities, yet not giving the cities the ability to be able to raise their own taxes in order to make it up.
Absolutely. The good example here, a parallel that shows you the difference is they've done the same thing over years at times with higher education, where they've cut higher education funding. Well, universities can turn around and increase tuition. Obviously, that has an impact on people, but there's a way out for them. Cities don't have a way out to collect that money they're losing from the state.
I'm talking with Bridge Magazine writer Ron French about his series of reports called Flint Syndrome. You contrast what things are like for cities like Flint and other Michigan cities with right across the border in Toledo. Here we have a post-industrial Rust Belt city, but things are different.
Absolutely. You would think that if a city were going to have problems here, they'd certainly have the same problems in Toledo. Now, Toledo's not Ann Arbor.
Right.
But it's a post-industrial city, lots of same sort of problems, but they're paying their bills. They have a police force that is twice the size per capita as Flint, and they have a good-sized middle class living inside the city limits.
Paying taxes. And they don't have Prop A in Headley.
Correct. And so the differences are, in Ohio, cities are allowed much more leeway in how they can collect income through revenue streams from their citizens.
And that's the lifeblood, as you say, that keeps the city going.
Absolutely. And, you know, no one wants to pay taxes, obviously. You know,
and clearly that was a big popular pitch in 1978 when Headley passed.
Right.
Right? Was that kind of why people bought into that? Yes, I want my taxes lowered.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's only years later you start to see the impact. When you have cities, the city of Wayne has been reduced to the point that they are holding fundraisers to pay for new fire hoses. And they just had finished one for a new Jaws of Life, too. Now, when you get to the point where you're basically having bake sales to pay for your police and fire departments, there's a systemic problem there.
Are you a voice crying in the wilderness or about this? I'm sure there are a lot of conversations happening with a lot of municipal finance experts. Is anyone in Lansing listening?
That's a good question there, Cynthia. I think there is some discussion of this now. That's beginning. Particularly, and no one would wish us anyone, but I think that because of Flint, because of that crisis, we can no longer avoid this conversation. That there has to be a talk about how we are funding our cities. And one obvious thing is making different decisions about how much revenue sharing we're giving our cities. The other is the emergency manager law, which is very different in other states. Here we're a cut-only sort of system. Once you get in trouble, you come in and you balance the budget as quickly as you can.
So you're chopping.
You're chopping. Let me give you an example. Another state we visited here for this series of stories was Pennsylvania. Mm. They have cities that aren't financially stressed also. But this pretty much sums up the difference between the two states. In Michigan, when a city becomes financially distressed, they are taken control of by the Department of Treasury. Okay, in Pennsylvania, it's the Department of Community and Economic Development. Now, think about the different mindset you have there. In Pennsylvania, the whole point when a city gets taken over is how do we build the revenue in that city so they can maintain themselves over a long period of time? Here, we cut as much as we can to balance the budget and we get out of town. Well, that doesn't change the systemic problems that those cities are facing.
I guess the question is, these are things that we as citizens, we're feeling the effect of fewer police and bake sales to buy fire hoses. What can we do as individuals to push for this? And would another step be a drive to get rid of Headley and Prop A? And would that ever pass?
That could be a drive to address those issues. That's a big, heavy lift.
Big, heavy lift.
I have a hard time seeing that happening,
yes,
at least in the short term. I think if there was concern about this, then when, you know, we have elections every couple of years, and you ask your legislators who are campaigning, how do you think cities should be funded? Do you think they should be getting more money? And how do you think that should happen? Put it on their radar. It's easy for legislators, especially with term limits, to lose track of how things were put in place. And they get distracted easily by the latest thing that's going on. So put it on their radar. Ask questions.
And if we continue along the road that we're on?
The cities are just going to get worse and worse. There is no way for them to recover without changes.
Ron French. You will find his series, Flint Syndrome, co-written with Mike Wilkinson, by going to bridgemi.com. Thanks so much for being with us, Ron.
Thank you.